Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a very special episode of Three Dads and a Console. If you are new, we are a podcast. We talk about the latest and greatest in video game news that you need to know about, and we're here to do it for you. The show is also kid-friendly, so no earmuffs are needed. As always, I'm Wabba Plays, joined alongside Court is here, and very special guest, the voice of the EA NHL series, James Sobuski. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Does that make me the console?
Would you like to be the which console would you be?
I mean, I'm about as personable as a console, so how about that?
very excited to have you. I'm having that thing where I hear you in the game all the time, and now you're talking to me, not at me. So that's very cool.
So you're sick of me already.
I do not turn the announcer name off. I do like the level of hype you bring.
You're the one guy who doesn't.
Yes. Well, so for me as a Canadian, I've heard your voice forever. So like for Wabba, he's out in the United States. So like when the EA game happens, like I remember when it was Ed Olchek and such, and I was just like, oh, I grew up with Canadian voices. So, and I think it's a Canadian thing. Like I can stand Jack Edwards just because of a Bruins fan, but it's different because like when people mention stuff like the World Juniors and such, and you hear all these announcers, and then when they do other teams and they go to other games, I was talking about how Harry Nail used to do to Wabba before, he used to do the Sabres games. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and I wanted to ask you the question later on about like how, when you're a fan of a team and then you start doing other teams, it's like, it's very weird. People don't realize, like, even a Gucher out in Vegas, like the guy was a Bruins guy for like forever on the radio, and now he's doing the Vegas Golden Knights. So it's very awesome how certain voices get around. But for me, I've always paid attention to the voices because I've always, you know, in Canada we get a lot more hockey, and we get yeah. TSN. We get, back in the day it was TSN and CBC, and now you've got Sportsnet. You've got all these different networks. And then when the US networks all come in, and I always laugh because you'll see like Bob McKenzie on ABC, and I'm like, well, he's just there. He's not really an ABC guy, but it's just the different things. So how is that for you, James? As I'm going to jump right into it because it's just in my brain, that question is just, you're in the Vancouver area. Mm-hmm. You said your dad was a Bruins fan growing up. And for me, my dad played for the Canucks and was a Bruin. So I have 2011 was tough for me. It's just fighting the same team at the same time. But how is it? What team did you cheer for growing up? And how do you distinguish yourself between being an announcer and a fan at the exact same time of the game?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's we've got time for this, right?
Yeah, I've got a lot. Yeah,
I'll give you the War and Peace, I guess, if we were a podcast. But for me as a kid, my dad was a huge Bruins fan. I grew up in Ottawa originally, and I knew he taught me to hate the Habs as a kid, right? So the Habs were kind of the gold standard. They won all the time. My dad was a Bruins fan, and I knew I didn't like the Habs, but I didn't necessarily love the Bruins. I didn't mind the Bruins, but I didn't love the Bruins. And I was about 5 years old, and my mom's sister, my aunt, had moved to Edmonton right around like end of the 70s, right around 1980. And for Christmas, and my birthday is 10 days before Christmas, so I get a lot of combined presents, you know, for anybody who's a December baby. But she sent me as a gift 1 year an Edmonton Oilers toque, scarf, and mitts. And the Oilers had just joined the National Hockey League from, you know, the World Hockey Association. And so I just kind of was of that, I don't like the Habs. The Bruins aren't my jam. Hey, you know what? It's Edmonton. I mean, it could have been the Hartford Whalers that she sent me.
And I think it's perfect storm. You kind of like hopped on like the best team bandwagon at the right time.
And that was it, right? And so coincidentally, young Wayne Gretzky's playing for the Oilers, and it just was, my mind was made up. I was like, I'm going to be an Oiler fan. And, you know, with the time differences and at the age I was, it's not like you're able to watch a lot of Oilers games, but I was a big newspaper kid. And I loved box scores. And I mean, there's a generation of people, you know, I'm sure kids, you know, look and click on reading stats and all of it and fantasy and all that. But, you know, back in the day for real stats geeks, it was reading the box scores in the newspapers. And so for me, I was consumed by just looking at what Wayne Gretzky would do every day. And you'd look at the box scores, you know, you'd see the Battle of Quebec and you'd see like it was always so much longer because of all the fights in the game. And you're like, whoa, look at how long that box score is. But I was a huge Oilers fan. And so fell in love with that team all through. And it's funny because my mom's next door neighbor as a kid was Dennis Potvin. So my mom had some love for the Islanders. Not that she's a hockey fan or much of a hockey fan, but so there was, you know, the Islanders and the Oilers rivalry. And my mom, hey, Denny Potvin. I'm like, well, we're not cheering for him right now. And so all through the 80s, I was an Oilers fan. And then when they started breaking up the band, I loved Gretzky. Hmm. So I felt like some of my loyalty went to L.A. to kind of keep an eye on Gretzky. You know, he still liked the Oilers, but as the band continued to kind of break up and Messier going to the Rangers and, you know, Coffey was gone to Pittsburgh and it just kind of continued. Right around that time in the early 90s, the Ottawa Senators were born in the National Hockey League again, or they returned to the National Hockey League. So, you know, at that point it was like, okay, we're going to cheer for the home team. And, you know, the problem was the Senators were, you know, one giant poop emoji for the first 6 years of existence. And so there wasn't a lot to get excited for outside of, you know, drafting Alexi Yashin and a couple of moments that took a while.
You thought you had Daig, you know, I remember that hockey card when he dressed up like a nurse. And I'm just like, yeah. I was at a hockey tournament in Ottawa and I'm like, oh, I hope I run into him. And then he has his first year and I'm like, whoa.
Well, and you know, if you look at Daig's numbers, to me, I think he's probably one of the most misunderstood stories. Like, obviously, he did not turn out to be the next Guy Lafleur, as everybody hoped. But, you know, he was incredibly charismatic. And I think probably in a lot of ways, he was born or he came into the NHL probably 15 years before, you know, his real time, because he was lightning quick. I mean, he was all speed and skill. Like that's a player who would have shone in today's NHL or post NHL lockout the year they canceled the season and rewrote the rule book. But that was a player that I think incredibly talented. I don't know if he loved the game, but he's a fascinating story in my eyes. And I think the entire city wanted to root for him. He was, you know, the bridge between the French and the English and Eastern Ontario and Western Quebec. And obviously it didn't work out. But anyway, so that's where I was a Senators fan. And then I moved to Toronto. The Leafs were always kind of the lovable losers that were on Hockey Night in Canada as a kid. But, you know, I wasn't enamored. I certainly, you know, you rooted for the Leafs because they were terrible for so long.
We don't do that. You know, as someone who lives in Toronto, it's a hatred in my family for that franchise.
Well, it's amazing how many Habs fans that live in Toronto too, right? So, I mean, it's a big city. And you know, going to Vancouver, I got there right at the time of the West Coast Express really kind of finding their way. And so that was an exciting time. And, you know, I think when you're covering people and you develop personal relationships, I think over time working in the media, I'm going to sound like Switzerland here, but if you had to nail me down to a team I'd love to see win a Stanley Cup, it'd be the Ottawa Senators. But I have found that having to work being Mr. Impartial in press boxes, no cheering in the press box has always been the unwritten rule. So you kind of learn to stay impartial, but I find I cheer more for players individually than I do for specific teams. But I would absolutely, as somebody who grew up in Ottawa, I'd love to see the Senators hoist the cup one day. And living in Vancouver, I mean, I'd love to see, you know, this city get a win at some point, because it's been 50 years and the toxicity in this town as a sports town is kind of, kind of sad. So I'd like to be the next
change. Vancouver is like my dad, like it's odd enough that they had no history of the franchise in Vancouver. Like they didn't save any of the stuff. There was actually a historian, his name's Andrew. I can't remember his last name. He messaged me on Twitter once. He was like, hey, I have a bunch of your dad's stuff. If you ever want it, like I'll get it out to you. And I said, well, if I'm ever in Vancouver, I'll get it. I don't want him to spend that kind of money to ship it. I'm like, I'll figure it out. But like, yeah, they didn't save any of that kind of stuff. Like I remember like my dad was the first one to win the Molson Cup there. And like, they don't, like Vancouver doesn't talk about their history. They do now. It's almost like 2011 was the start of the Vancouver franchise or Pavel Bure. Cause it's very weird. Going back, I got to go to a game out in Vancouver and it's just funny how you brought up the history of the Canucks and how I'm just like, it's so weird how they don't, hold this, like in their alumni box, yes, they have pictures of the first couple franchises, but even my dad said when he first started out in Vancouver, he said after his first training camp, he's like, oh, well, this is going to be an interesting career here in this franchise, because it was just so badly managed, so badly and they just didn't care about it. And then the city, it's great. I love the city. Like the hockey team's great. They're going to, you know, blow it up all over again. I don't know why, but it's so weird because I would rather Ottawa win over Vancouver. That's what I think I'm getting at. Like definitely.
Yeah. You didn't really beat the
Bruins last night. I'm like, whatever.
Well, you know, it is interesting. Like that was the one thing. I think when you come into any market, you know, having moved around, I worked in Toronto. I worked in Vancouver. I went back to Toronto. I came back to Vancouver. But I think it's sometimes understanding the history of a market. Right. And the history of a team. And, you know, when I first got to Vancouver in 2000, and I say this respectfully, but, you know, I had always associated Vancouver as being, you know, outside of the 94 Stanley Cup run, which, you know, that's that Rangers Canucks series in 94 was tremendous, absolutely tremendous with the talent on both ends of the ice. But, you know, I always kind of associated as a kid, like, the Canucks were terrible through the 80s, right? Like they were absolutely awful. They were cannon fodder in the Smythe division, where they would get absolutely pounded by the Flames, by the Oilers. Dale Hawerchuk padded his stats. You know, Marcel Dion would pad his stats. And, you know, outside of 1982, where they kind of fluked their way into the Stanley Cup final, and they got, you know, a hot goalie with Richard Brodeur and off to the Stanley Cup final, but they got swept, right? And they got swept by the Islanders. So, you know, for me, I never associated much in terms of success. I mean, it was, you know, for me, it was Tony Tanti was the guy in the 80s who put up all the numbers for the Canucks. And so, you know, when I'd hear, you know, when I first got out here, you know, I'd hear people, Darcy Rota, and you know, I've gotten to know Darcy, you know, and he's been an institution in this market for years, but like people go, Darcy Rota, former Canuck, and it'd be like, I don't know if that's, you know, I don't know if you want to wave the flag for that, right? Like, I mean, when you think of other markets and the history, but it really took Vancouver a long time to really build something to be proud of, because the 70s, obviously, and when Newsy was there, it just wasn't. I mean, your dad, obviously, his name has some reverence, like in terms of what he was able to do and what he was able, and you know, and like there's certain names like Orlin Kurtenbach, you know, and Pat Quinn, and there's that sort of reverence that when people kind of look at certain players. But the 70s, the Canucks were terrible, right? And into the 80s, outside of that 82 run, they were terrible, right? And so you're kind of looking at these certain moments, and finally in the 90s with 94, but it obviously wasn't sustainable. Like Bure was exciting, but it's really the last 25 years or so that people look back now where the Canucks feel like there's something to get excited about. The 2011 run with the Twins, the West Coast Express, it wasn't really sustainable, but it was fun hockey for about 5 years. And then obviously 94 as well. So how's your dad doing anyway?
He's good. He's driving to Florida, I think, about now. He's gonna be I think
is he a snowbird? So he's Florida, yeah, in the winter. And
he, it's funny, he's French, so he's with a lot of the former Canadians. So a lot of them all live out on the Gulf Coast of Florida. Yep. So I know he's got a tea time in a couple days with Shut. Then they do their exercises in the wave pool. Very nice man. That he's very good. We're actually going to I'm going out there in March, and we're going to go to a game.
Does Bobby still skate?
No, his back and knees are gone.
Okay.
They're gone. He can barely, like when he golfs, it looks like he's taking a slap shot. He can barely get his back around. But like he's doing this exercise routine with Steve Shutt because his knees are gone too. And they're trying to get their knee strength back because my dad wants to get on the ice with my daughter. So that's his goal.
Oh,
get
cool.
On the ice by the end of next year.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, you hear Bobby's name gets mentioned from time to time here in these markets.
Which is weird because I'm a Bruins fan because I was born in the Boston side of the family. But when I went back to Vancouver in 2016, I went to a game with a buddy of mine And we went out to the bar and all my age group. And he was like, this is Bobby Lalonde's son. And I didn't pay for a drink for the rest of the night. Like, it was just like, it was, and I'd never had that growing up in Toronto. Like, they don't care. Toronto, no, unless you're a Toronto Maple Leaf, you're one, like, no one cares.
Well, I would say, I think it depends if the name kind of has some resonance, right? But I think with Toronto, in a lot of ways, there's so many people that everybody seems to have an angle. Right. Where Vancouver is, it's funny, by Canadian standards, Vancouver's still a big city, but Vancouver's a small town in a lot of ways. Like, it's, you know, there's not, you know, in Toronto, you can find something to do every night of the week, where in Vancouver, like, you know, for the first 3 days of the week, like, the sidewalks are rolled up, right? Like, it's pretty quiet. And so, you know, everybody wants to work an angle. Everybody wants to work a gimmick. But I feel like maybe the gimmicks are a little more appreciated here in Vancouver, whereas Toronto, there's just so many people. Like, I remember, it's kind of sad and embarrassing to kind of to share this story now, but I was working at a Canadian sports network at the time, which has since been swallowed up by Sportsnet, but it was called The Score in the early 2000s. And I remember one night we were in Toronto, early 2000s, and we're trying to get into this after hours club. And I was with a buddy of mine who was like a team services rep for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I was with a buddy of mine who had won a Grey Cup, and he was playing, I think, for the Calgary Stampeders at the time. And there was myself, who, I mean, I certainly don't want to overstate who I was and by any stretch, because, you know, not that I was most, you know, overly recognizable, but I had a little bit of TV personality, or at least profile. And then another buddy of mine who was with us, who worked with me at The Score as well. And anyway, I was never one to try to angle to talk to the doorman, because I just never felt like, I was always worried about getting turned away, right? Like, I never felt like I had enough game or enough stroke to get in there. But anyway, here we are, all three sheets to the wind, 2:30 in the morning, trying to get into this after hours club. And, you know, hey, look at the Grey Cup ring. And hey, look at this business card. And he's with the Leafs. And, you know, hey, this guy's on TV. And I remember, I remember the doorman kind of looking at us going, why don't you guys just try to find a sports bar then? So you didn't pay for a drink, but some of us are still struggling trying to find our gimmicks there.
It only happened in Vancouver. Like, I've been to Boston. I went to the Stanley Cup Finals. I was hoping to run into a buddy of ours there, the Wabas and I, but I was at the game and I'm wearing my dad's jersey and I'm walking around the hallways and no one knew who I was. Just happened, I get someone yells my name from across the thing. I turn around and he's like, "You're not news." And I like walk over to him and it ends up being Stan Jonathan. And he was like, "Wow, no one will be wearing that jersey." Like, he was like, "You suck out like a sore thumb."
Stan Jonathan gave you the call out. Wow.
Like, well, because him and my dad used to be roommates.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, he knew my dad very, very well. Like, they were on that, you know, the anniversary team that just went up in Madison Square Garden. But anyway, it's different. It's different for me growing up in Toronto, but obviously you have the same, you know, sort of thing. Like,
And when you're south of the border, everybody calls you Lalonde as opposed to Lalonde.
Yes.
Lalonde. Right?
Yes.
It's funny. We were voicing one of the first year I was voicing the game, and Dennis Potvin's name came up, and I had always known him, associated him as Denis Potvin or Denis Potvin because of my mother. Right? Now, my mom is fully bilingual, but I mean, she sounds English when you talk to her in English, but if she talks French, like, she's got the accent and everything. But it was always Denis Potvin because of, you know, just the amount of bilingualism in Ottawa. We get into the voice booth and I had Ferraro near screaming at me over. He goes, "If you say Denis Potvin, people are going to look at you like you've got three heads." I mean, what are you talking about? His name's Denis Potvin. Guys, he's French. He's like, "It's Denis Potvin." So that's how he's known.
Did you actually record with him?
Yeah, Ray and I.
Were you both in the booth at the same time?
So up until COVID really hit and changed the world, what, almost 3 years ago now, which is kind of crazy to say, we would do voice sessions because Ray's local in Vancouver. and I'm obviously in the Vancouver area as well. So we would meet up. Some of our sessions would be solo and some of our sessions would be dual sessions. And the dual sessions were, you know, I say this, you know, they're way more fun because you've got somebody you can play off of, right? You can, there's a banter, there's an interaction. And that was something that they really wanted with the game as well, to kind of allow us to react. So if I'm, you know, oh, what a big hit. And Ray, like, oh my God, that was a truck who hit him. And so, like, we're feeding off each other, or there's little chirps, and it's, you know, it's keeping it, you know, it's keeping it on the rails, trying to stay as authentic as we can for the game. But at the same time, still allowing us to have a little bit of fun and to play along. So those sessions always felt way more fun in that, but we'd pretty much been virtual. But I mean, we're on the same calls where we, you know, we do those like two person sessions, you know, really, but yeah, mostly, most of it's done virtually. This is why I've got all the dressed up. We all kind of had to create virtual rooms now, right? Like, you guys with, like, look at Court's background, right? He's got all the toys, the movie posters, where, you know, before it was just like you held a phone up and it was all grainy, right?
You're, exactly.
How'd you get wrapped up with the EA anyway? So Doc Emmerich did it before you, which those are, you know, big shoes to fill. So what was that like? But also, how did you get involved with, you know, trying out and getting involved with EA?
One of my best friends and I hosted a podcast together, a guy named David Sanchez, who is a football analyst for both the National Football League and the Canadian Football League here in Canada. And Davis played for the Chargers, and he played, won multiple Grey Cups in the Canadian Football League. And anyway, one of his closest friends is one of the lead producers, one of the big guys with the NHL franchise with Electronic Arts, and his name's Sean Ramjagsing. Oh, and anyway, just long story short, Davis and I were chatting one evening because we, you know, we frequently chatted, and he was just saying, he was talking to his buddy Rammer, and he said they're looking for a new broadcast team for the video game, and they're auditioning all these guys, and kind of rattled off some of the names that were auditioning. And I kind of thought to myself, man, like, and I'd love to do that, right? Like, I've been playing video games since really the birth of Pac-Man, right? And so I feel like I'm part of that, you know, original video game generation. And so, you know, the NHL franchise was certainly near and dear to my heart over the years. And I said, and so I asked Davis, I said, hey, do you think you could ask your buddy if, you know, if I could get an audition, like, or at least get a swing at the plate? And he said, yeah, no problem. Let me ask him. And anyway, true to his word, I guess about 3-4 days later, I get an email from an HR representative from Electronic Arts. And I think they were based out of California, but they said, hey, look, your name's come up as a person we'd like to audition. You know, can you be available? And so I went in, and a few weeks later, I did my audition. Actually, it was a day that we were actually flying with the family to Maui. So I hosted a radio show at the time. I did the morning show and then raced off to the studios in Burnaby and did the audition. And it was kind of call it like you see it. And, you know, off this little black and white monitor. And I had heard and kind of noticed a couple of producers kind of chuckling. And, you know, I just kind of felt like, you know, you see smiles, you kind of feel like, yeah, you know what? I feel like I'm getting a good read, and kind of walked out going, you know, I'm not really sure what the hell just happened, but that was fun. I feel good. I felt like I was representative of who I was. I made the most of it, I thought, and off we went and raced off to the airport and went to Hawaii. And, you know, I kind of forgot about it, to be honest with you, the audition, because, you know, I didn't hear anything for a month. And, and then, you know, I thought, you know, I think it popped in my head at one point where I thought, you know what, I'm just happy I had a chance to audition. Like, if nothing else, I'm proud of the fact I did it. And then I get an email that says, hey, we've shortlisted the audition selection process and you've made the shortlist. We should have a decision in the next week to 10 days. And I was like, all right, still at the table. Okay.
There we go. Cool.
And crickets for another month. So it's like, again, well, you know what? Hey, I made the short list. That's pretty cool. That's awesome. Get an email a month later. It says, hey, we'd like to schedule a chemistry test with you and another talent. Can you come in for another session? I go in for, I mean, obviously, sure. So I go in for a session, and who do I run into in the parking lot is Ray Ferraro. And now Ray and I had worked together at TSN years past, and so familiar with it. And I, you know, and I assume that, okay, look, if I'm auditioning with Ray, this has to be serious, because Ray was kind of the third man in the game before, you know, before he's been kind of right hand. He was kind of with Doc and Eddie. And so I was kind of like, oh boy, like this is for real now. And so we went in, and I think, you know, went in for about 15 minutes, and I think they heard what they wanted, and they said, all right, this is great. We'll let you know. And again, crickets for like another month. So like, this is quite the process. And
yeah.
And then I get another email about a month later, and it's, this is kind of middle of summer. And they said, look, we'd like to schedule another audition with you. Can you come in? And it's like, now it's like, okay, I want this. Like, I want this. And like, oh my God, like now there's legitimate butterflies and all of it. And so I go in, and one of the producers, a guy named David Pritchett, just said, look, we really like the energy you bring. We really like the fun. We just also want to make sure you can bring the goods in terms of just the straight goods. So I want you to give it to us a little more straight, a little less, you know, and, you know, and I think the other thing was, you know, Doc Emmerich was the voice of hockey for a generation in America for 40 years. And, you know, when you look at the people who've done the game in the past, whether it was Gary Thorne before Doc, right? And Gary also, you know, a voice of hockey for, you know, for a stretch on ESPN. And before that, you know, you had Jim Hewson and Huey, you know, Hockey Night in Canada. And honestly, like, you're talking about three Hall of Fame, all world hockey voices that have been part of the game. And, you know, respectfully, it was a little bit of a who in the blue hell is James Cebulski, and the sense that, you know, I think, Court, to your point, I think some people would be familiar with me from my time, whether it was Sportsnet or TSN or The Score, but mostly as a reporter, not as a conventional play-by-play guy, despite the fact that this is what I always wanted to do. There just weren't a lot of opportunities to get those chances. And, you know, and as a kid, you know, you're breaking into the business, you follow the money, you take the job. You know, it's like, I got a job as a reporter for you. I really want to be a play-by-play. Well, we have a reporting job for you. Okay, I'll take the reporting for $200, Alex. And so, anyway, they basically said, like, look, you know, there might be some pushback here. We just want to make sure you can do it. And at the same time, are you going to be acceptable if there's criticism on social media that, you know, people, you know, you're an unknown commodity in America and really outside of Canada, and, you know, and not known as a conventional play-by-play guy. And I said, I think I've got a thick enough skin to handle it. And you know what? The last audition, they loved what they heard, and they said, we'll let you know in a week. It was the longest friggin' week of my life. Like, every text, every email that came in, I thought, is this it? Is this it? And, you know, true to their word, it was almost like to the minute, like, we'll call you to let you know in a week. And Rammer had called and said, we'd like for you to be the voice of the NHL. And I've been very fortunate to do some really cool things, win some awards, and travel to a lot of cool destinations in my lifetime. But getting that call and having a chance to be part of a franchise that I would, you know, buy copies and, you know, played a lot of hours, and to now be part of it, it's an incredible feeling. It is not something I take for granted in the least, because for everybody that consumes the product and for everybody that plays the game, I'm that guy too. You know, I'm not the player I once was, but I certainly, you know, try to treat every, I want the consumer and whoever the gamer is, I want them to feel like that's the biggest game in the world when they play it. And that's the energy and the approach that I take when having that opportunity.
And no disrespect to Doc, but I do enjoy the energy level compared to the previous iterations. Again, he's good at his craft, but definitely a difference when you are
and it's different, right? Like, I think it's there's an element of there's a theatrical component to it, right? It's it's different because you're trying to manufacture an energy that doesn't fully exist. I mean, you're going into a studio, there's no game, there's no 20,000 people aren't there
when you did it, or did they just let you ad lib the whole
there's time? A lot of it's mostly ad lib. It's basically a context that, okay, we need you know, a pass over to the right side, you know, or a pass over to the right winger.
And so injected Biscuit into the game.
yeah, the Biscuit. You know, it's funny how certain little isms and words that get debated and what some people.
I've been waiting for like Rock 'em Sock 'em words to get in there because you got that Canadian. I've been waiting for like an NHL where all of a sudden you like just throw out Boango and I'm like, all right, well there we go. That's more Canadian than anything, or like say Kachuk instead of Kachuk. But it's just in my brain because like I watch it and I hear. When I'm playing, I hear more of a Canadian broadcast. Because when Doc Emmerich did the game for me here in Canada, I'm like, I didn't grow up with Doc Emmerich. I grew up with Jim Houston. I grew up with Harry. That's who I grew up with.
Yeah.
So when they did Doc Emmerich, I'm like, why do all the Americans love this guy so much? I'm like, I'm so confused.
I would kill to have a career like Doc Emmerich's. But no, I just think that... you know, I think at times as Canadians, and I think we're starting to kind of, you know, loosen the tie a little bit. We took hockey so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're starting to try to have some fun with it more and more now. And, you know, the chase for some personality, like, you know, I mean, you look at how Austin Matthews has been showing up to the rink in the fashion. And, you know, I wouldn't say the NHLers are quite at the point of the NBA players and how they arrive to the rink, but... you know, there's definitely more of an expressive style and, you know, the whole notion and, you know, Court, your dad could speak to this, but, you know, everybody kind of stayed in their lane, right? Nobody was outspoken. And we're not talking about besides a generation of 50 years ago.
Guy was a little outspoken.
Yeah. And like so many of these players, that weren't allowed to have a personality. And I think hockey's starting to embrace that. And, you know, for me, you know, calling a game and to me, I am of the approach that you're selling a product. Mm-hmm. And not that I ever really wanted to be a salesperson, but I think that if somebody's sitting down and willing to take the time to whether it's play a game or whether it's to turn on a television or a radio or a streaming service to consume a product for 2.5 to 3 hours, man, it better be good, right? With all the options out there. And it drives me nuts when I can turn on a TV or turn on a game and within seconds, I can tell you that this game means nothing just by the tone of the broadcaster, right? Like it's a blowout and, you know, the broadcaster checks out. It's like, you got a job to do, you know? And to me, like, I know it's not for everybody, but like, I love the Gus Johnsons. Like I love the person who sells the broadcast, who has the fun and makes it feel intense. And for me, the approach that I took with the game was to make it feel like this is game 7 of a playoff series, right? May not be the Stanley Cup, but like, you know, there are playoff implications tonight for both teams and that sort of intensity. And the one thing that the producers do, they pipe in crowd noise now when we call the game. So it forces you, it's almost manufactured. So when we do it in a voice session, they just add the sound effect in our headphones that we are, this is so much bigger, right? So that is, oh, you know, so it kind of forces you to, you know, hey, passes the puck over to here and you're, you know, you can have your certain tone of voice in a studio, but when it's silent, you know, you don't necessarily perk up and, you know, but now you have crowd noise, it's a force of habit to all of a sudden feel like you've got to start speaking up a little bit louder. Right. So
should have put a crowd noise in for this podcast then.
Are you saying I've been boring for the
No, never.
That's Waba. Waba, come on, man.
Yeah, I'm getting it. Yeah. That's not what I was saying.
I knew I liked your Canadian host better.
question for you. So for the very first time, my last name got in the game last year. Mm-hmm. And I know I was going at Nasher put like this tweet out. And I know Waba was like, how is it that we get named? Like, I know now there's a goalie that has the same last name. Even though my name is very popular in Canada, which just wasn't in the game. Mm-hmm. We always say it's in the game. As someone growing up, I'm playing the game for my whole life. I've always wanted to create my dad. And I was able to do that last year, which was the coolest thing ever.
Try having a last name Cebulski, right?
There you go.
That was the first thing when I got in the game. I was like, when I got the contract, I was like, Cebulski is getting in the friggin' game this year. And I'm going to say my name.
Dude, so you got to put my name in the game. They asked some of the people involved with EA to like give the usernames. And I was like, oh my God. like you can be play-by-play named Wabba and the announcers actually say, like, it was unreal. So
it's cool, man. And honestly, and
this was it, like, that hearing your voice as well, like it, when you like play the game
best.
And
go, it's me. It may sound like it sounds so trivial, but everybody, like, internally, I mean, we are so far as a global nation, I guess, is, you know, around the world, like, it's a global game. And, you know, even Canada over the last, you know, as a Canadian, over the last, in my lifetime, like, we are far more diverse now as a nation than we ever have. And same with the United States and across Europe, where the majority of copies of games are sold. But, you know, it's not just the Smith and the Jones and the Jenkins anymore, right? Like, we are far more diverse. And so, you know, I look at a name like Cebulski as a kid. Trying to pronounce that name 40 years ago was like, might as well have been speaking in hieroglyphics, right? Like, going, whoa, nobody could pronounce it. Now I feel like Cebulski is simple compared to other people's last names. And, you know, to have that opportunity to put your name in the game, man, inclusivity, right? And right. That's the one I put that out on social the first year. And I said, look, if there's anybody who wants their name in the game, like, you know, let me hear you. And we just started compiling a list. And I think we're up to about 5,000 names in the game now. And some of it, like, for familiar names, like Court, for your last name, I think sometimes it stems from just alumni. So for, you know, former players, that whether they were members of the Alumni Association. But, you know, one of the things that I think the producers and the community have really tried to do in the last couple of years is, hey man, like, let's get as many names possible in the game. So you use probably the current NHL roster. You can draw from some, you know, minor league names as well. But, you know, I think we've got all of junior hockey. I think we've got the American League now. We've got the East Coast League. We've got the National Hockey League. We've got, you know, so many different leagues. And then you throw it out there, and we add another 1,000 names from, you know, names that are, you know, South Asian and Asian and European and, you know, Eastern European, and just names that would never have found their way in the game otherwise that are now part of it.
Well, now you can just get my dad added as an icon, then I'm good. It's funny because I see all the Vancouver guys, and I actually emailed the person that's head of the alumni. I'm like, you're in the game. You got to put my dad in the game, because the head of Vancouver alumni is in the game. But I'm not going to.
It's Robin, right? Is Robin's the head of the alumni, isn't he?
Yeah. So he's like, they're in the game. And I'm just like, you know, just add.
I'd rock an N99 Bobby Lalonde and Hutt.
Yeah, he'd be fast.
Did you say a 49 Bobby Lalonde?
Well, he was very fast.
Got to be at least 67 for bronze.
Going back to the 1990s ratings, where guys could still get like a 49 or something along those lines.
Well, like, right? I still think about, like, the when the NHL first came out. That's when I see Ovi behind you, and I'm like, well, that's when Gretzky hit the 802. Like, I remember that run because it's also the same year that Solani hit his record for the rookie. Like, unbelievable year in hockey. But, like, I look at the games that you've done so far, and they're some of the best NHLs in a really long time. So that's amazing. And is there any, without giving away, like, secret names that we don't know are in the game?
Ooh,
like, some fun things.
That's a good question.
Don't break NDA. I'm not trying to.
Yeah. I still need that contract.
Yeah, right. You want you back for 24?
No. You know what? I'm trying to think. You know what? We haven't done any phone book in a while. You know, off the top of my head, there's not anything that comes to mind.
Like, if we unlock them, like, we create that player, all of a sudden they actually, because I remember way back in the day for you and I growing up, James, it was in NBA and in NHL. If you put in their stats for making Michael Jordan, he would show up in the game. And then same with, like, Gretzky and all these guys. I'm wondering if there's those in NHL.
Those little Easter eggs. Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, pretty much most of the names that are familiar are in there. Mm. You know, it's just a question of the physical creation or the digital creation of a specific player. Like, if they're not part of the alumni, then I think that usually impacts it. I think back, like, just a few players that were buddies of mine from over the years. And, you know, Todd Bertuzzi is, you know, an old friend of mine just from my days of covering him. We've stayed in touch over the years. And, you know, he, you know, since he was no longer a player, he wasn't in the game. And I was like, man, what's going on? Got to get Bird in the game. And somehow in the last couple of years, he's now like a playable, you know,
good
part, part of the alumni team or whatever that looks like. Right.
It's so team build this time around, you got him at 92 right now.
Who's a 92?
Is it Bertuzzi a 92?
Yeah.
Bertuzzi a 92? That's too high.
You have to do a lot to get him. You could just get him in a pack. I know we were talking about like having fun in the games and different stuff. And one of the last questions I want to ask you about is the inclusion of, you might have remembered this, your co-host Snoop Dogg a few years ago. Can you tell us about that? Did you get to meet him? And if not, like, what was recording like? Because you had a like, did you get to meet him at all or no?
We flew down to Los Angeles and spent 2 days in his studio with
you
him.
You recorded with Snoop. Yeah, okay, yeah, so yeah. Here's how we talked about this before. I'm like, I can't believe that they made James talk to Snoop Dogg like he was there, but he was just alone in a booth. So you're telling me you and Snoop Dogg actually got to, like, that was banter.
We flew down. It's funny. We had kind of brainstormed, I want to say probably about 6 months earlier, about who'd be kind of a fun name, like as a guest commentator. And we were just, you know, we were throwing, you know, just throwing things against the wall. And I think I might've mentioned Snoop, and it was like, oh man, that would be cool. And he had done some stuff with Madden.
He's in Madden.
But he's a huge hockey fan too, right? Like, he goes,
well, I don't think I'd say he's a huge hockey fan, but I would say this, he's a huge sports fan. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and I'll tell you, like, we flew down, and when they said this is a go, it was like, oh my God, this is crazy. And we flew down and spent 2 nights at his studio, or 2 days at his studio. And he was everything you would expect him to be and more. Like, he was fantastic. He took a lot of breaks. You know, like, the 9 o'clock scheduled starting time was probably closer to 11:15. But man, like, he was so much fun. And one of the coolest things he had said, we had flown down, myself, along with three producers. And right out of the gate, when he walked into the studio, he said, guys, I am not above being told what to do. He, you know, basically, like, the better the game is, the better I look. The better I look, the better the game is. So you tell me what you need, you tell me what you want, and we'll have fun. But man, like, we riffed, like, we improvised and just rolled off one another. And he was so much fun. Like, he was so, I like, from my standpoint, I just thought, oh my gosh, my Guy Lafleur picture. Oh man. But I loved it. He was everything you wanted him to be. He was a total pro. He was so smart, so quick on his feet. And he was so Snoop. Like, it was just, and man, what a smart dude. Like, he, you know, for a guy who kind of plays the, you know, the living the life. I mean, I think he certainly lives the lifestyle, but at the same time, like, you don't get that successful by just coasting. And he is not afraid to reinvent himself, to try different things. And I have the utmost respect for that guy, for the empire that he has built.
So is there a lost tapes that we don't know of recordings? Because I'm sure there was some explicit back into the game.
There, you know what? There is, there was one outtake. Oh my God, I'd love to listen to them. There was one moment where there was a producer who was just on it. He was the one guy who was there to work, where I think the rest of us were kind of, holy, we're working with Snoop Dogg. Sorry, pardon my French here. But I'm like, this is crazy. We're working with Snoop. And you know, Tim was, he was on it. He was, you know, the clipboard and making the notes and the timing, every little, you know, every little context, every voice. And there was a moment where he was on it all day. And then we had this one moment where it was pretty funny and it was back and forth and we're like, great. And then the one producer kind of looks over and then, how long was that? And he just kind of, I have no idea. And there's like this little pause in the studio, and Snoop just kind of, you know, and they're still recording, and he just kind of stops, goes, man, you've been on us like nonstop for the last 4 hours. And the one time that we ask you a question, how long was that? You turn around with, I don't know. What the you've been doing all day? And it just like, and like, he was just like, just chirping to have fun. He was comfortable enough to start talking smack. And oh my God, like, I'm probably doing this no justice whatsoever, but we were dying with tears. The fact that now he was chirping, you know, he was chirping one of our colleagues, and we just thought it was the best. So
that's unreal.
He was so much fun. He was so
like, he was having fun. And the fact that you actually were there, it blows my mind. That is something I did not think you were actually there.
One of my favorite moments from the Olympics is when Snoop is with Kevin Hart and he's got the binder on the thing. And this is not like, that wasn't staged, because they've interviewed him about it after. He was being serious. Kevin Hart's like, what is that? He's like, the binder. And Snoop's like, what, you didn't read it? And like, that got out after the fact. And I'm just like, that is the funniest. Like, to me, he was just like, turns to me, he's like, you didn't read it? Well, you have fun today.
Well, it was awesome, because we were in the middle of the middle of the NBA finals. So we were all kind of team Raptors, and he's a Cali guy. So he was all about Golden State. So there was a little bit of the natural back and forth, just kind of talking about the series. And we had a good bonding moment where I told him, like, you know, I fell in love with basketball because of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And when I said that, just kind of flippantly, he kind of sat up and he was like, huh, really? He goes, I'm gonna show you something later, before, you know. And you know, true to his word, like, he walked out at the end of the first day session. And we all kind of said goodbye, and he came back about 10 minutes later, and he had this little jewelry box he opened up, and it was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's All-Star rings from 1971 and 1985. And he was like, Kareem was my guy too. And he goes, I bought his All-Star rings. And it was cool. Like, he just talking about the improvisation with like Kevin Hart and as well. And I remember asking him about Half Baked when we were kind of wrapping up, and I was like, oh my God, I love that movie with Chappelle. And I said, I was curious, it's like, how much was that improvised, and how much was, he goes, it was all improvised. He goes, it was so much fun. And he had the utmost respect for Chappelle, where he kind of said, you know, David asked him to be in the movie, and Snoop had kind of, he was like, I don't have a lot of money. And Snoop was kind of like, oh, where have I heard this before? And David's kind of, he goes, but if you would consider doing it, if I ever amount to anything, like, I will be grateful, and I would certainly return the favor if I ever become famous or something. And Snoop kind of said, he goes, you know, true to his word, like, he had me on Chappelle's show twice as the musical guest. And like, that show was the biggest show in the world at that period of time. And so, like, he totally returned that favor and gave me that platform all those years later. So that was pretty cool. Like, it was so much fun for me. And at times, every once in a while, I'll forget about it. And what somebody asked me, like, it's hard not to smile thinking of that experience 3 years ago.
I had to. It's the most surreal. When they said he's in there again, I'm like, that is unreal. Like, it was very fun. But you know, we had fun today. I appreciate you coming on. Like I said, this is very, I hear you, it sounds weird, I hear you every day when I play this game, so to actually have you talking with me and not at me is very cool. And I appreciate you taking the time to come speak with us and, you know, talk sports, give us a little insight into the background of, you know, getting involved and being the voice of, you know, one of our favorite games.
Well, I'm thankful that you're not sick of me just yet after having listened to me all the time. And
hey, I'm the one who grew up. I'm the one who had to watch you on TV too. Like, come on now. I look at your sports, the Score alum. Like, mm-hmm. You guys have all like phenomenal careers. Just like, because I remember when the Score first came out, it was like, yeah, it was this for me, it was great because it had more stats than anything else. It was, mm-hmm, more stats than any other, the sports.
Yeah, it had a ticker. It was a running ticker in all the scoreboards. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you look at your whole group of all you guys. It's just like, wow, you guys have all done phenomenal. Which is awesome.
Honorable mention to Anthony Shoshone, who kind of ran that outfit, and love that guy. And he gave so many of us just the opportunity to allow us to be ourselves, whether it's Elliot Friedman, whether it's Tim McAuliffe, Sid Sixero, Cabrel Richards, Martin Geyer. Just an incredible roster. Scott Laughlin and Sirius NHL XM satellite radio, and just the list goes on and on. Steve Coolius, like, just there's just so much talent, and there's probably a bunch of names, you know, like Renee Paquette, who you know, now with AEW and for years with WWE and Jackie Redmond as well, Greg Sansoni. I mean, just an armada of talent that came through in a very brief window. Just a great place that recognized talent and allowed that talent to be themselves and to grow. It turned out to be a wonderful breeding ground for me, that my first real big break. And, it proved to be a launching pad to go to TSN and to do some amazing things for 7 years there, and then to go on to Sportsnet and smoke and mirrors for a few more years.
So when you're not hanging out with us, where can folks find more from you?
These days I am, you can find me obviously with NHL 23, which I noticed that there's a lot of great prices for Boxing Day deals these days. So grab a copy.
You
if you
said you weren't a salesman. Look at that. They give
always
you a cut.
Sell it.
Use
always
code, sell use code Sobuski for 10% off.
Yeah, exactly. If you can spell it. You know what? We also recently launched a podcast in the last couple months, called Clearing the Crease Podcast with, Mike Commodore, who, played in the NHL as a defenseman, with the Flames, with the Hurricanes, with the Detroit Red Wings, with the Senators, and also Andrew Raycroft, who, if you're a Bostonian, obviously you'd be familiar with the former Calder Trophy winner. So it's myself, Andrew Raycroft, yeah, and Mike Commodore, and everything.
My wife named a cat after him.
Which one? Razor?
Raycroft. She had Patrice and Raycroft.
Well, Patrice was Andrew's roommate at one time, so... There you go. I will pass that along. That I feel like that is a story for the next edition of
exactly.
The
podcast. We won't get into that. But thank you so much for joining us again. If you had fun, make sure to follow us on YouTube.com/3dadsinaconsole. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, anywhere that you find podcasts. We're going to be doing more interview series like this, just different from the regular news and norm. And thank you again, James, for joining us.